They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining me today is Barbara Stage. Barbara's an attorney in Florida, and she represents both homeowners and homeowner associations, presumably keeping them under control somewhat and giving them good, sound legal advice, something they don't normally get. And she's very active in making sure that the citizens are well taken care of. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Barbara, you wrote a letter, presumably to the legislature, sort of saying that you really need some kind of reform in Florida. You want to elaborate a little bit on that? Tell us why you think you need the reform?
Sure, and the timing of it was important to me because not only, you know, is the legislature at this time considering several bills that would bring about some much-needed HOA reform. But I copied the president of the Florida Bar on the letter because he had published an article in the Florida Bar magazine talking about we need to have a new business model for those middle-class people who are not eligible for legal aid and free legal services but don't make enough to pay an attorney.
And this is not necessarily strictly for HOAs, it's in general, right?
It's in general, but okay. And the problem we're having in Florida is there's certain attorneys with these big association law firms,
yes,
that go around telling their association clients, do now, defend later, because 95% of your homeowners cannot afford to sue you. The few that can will soon learn that they could use that money for their retirement, put a child through college, go on a nice vacation or a cruise, and they're going to want out pretty quick.
That's pretty much what they're saying across the board. I mean, this is their mantra. It's like, go ahead and do it. You're on less than concrete legal foundation, and people just won't avail themselves of their rights.
That's true. And in Florida, there are no state agencies that regulate homeowner associations. There's the state agency, the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, which regulates condominiums, but even the scope of the cases that they can hear through the arbitration process are limited. So they won't hear anything that has to do with assessments or that include damages to just one unit owner. So it's pretty much the Wild West. Anything goes.
You know, we have a whole panel here that's supposed to be overseeing these things. And we actually pay an ombudsman, and the ombudsman is not allowed to say or do anything. And it reminds me of a cartoon that I used when I was lobbying not to have the ombudsman. And the cartoon was this, it was a non sequitur cartoon, and it was this guy who had just trudged through the desert carrying a gas can, presumably he'd run out of gas, and he comes to this information booth in the middle of the desert in this oasis, and the woman in the information booth looks down at him and says, the only thing I'm allowed to do is tell you you're screwed.
and that's essentially what
the kidding.
And that's essentially what the ombudsman's allowed to do is tell you, hey, you know, you agreed, you screwed, you're screwed. What do you want?
It's sad, but it's the truth.
It is the truth. And a lot of people look at Florida, they look at Virginia, they look at Nevada, they look at a few of these states that have these ombudsmen that are placebos, and they say, oh, you know, you're so lucky you have someone there. But, you know, you're not lucky. We don't have anyone there. I mean, we're paying someone, but...
Right. It doesn't do to have someone if they have no authority to do anything about the problem.
You know, in your practice, what are some of the biggest issues and problems that you see that come through the door for you?
Well, most of them are assessment disputes. I found a high rise in the number of cases where the associations are claiming homeowners didn't pay their assessments, because during the recession, the best way for attorneys and community association managers to make money was to create disputes that allowed them to bill outside of their contract. The attorneys for litigation and the community association managers, you know, collections or something else that might be off the scope of their general fee schedule. So there are a lot of lost checks. Or they claim that they never received the check, the owner didn't send it. And most people just mail it, regular mail, put a stamp on it, you know, or they put it in a drop box in the community. They never got credited for these checks. And the one thing that happens is, you know, the minute you miss a payment and the Florida Court of Appeals recognized this in a case called Oceans 2, is once you miss that payment, it's just a snowball of fees and charges that get added, and it's a no-win situation for the owner, even if they catch it right away and try to rectify it right away. So that's the biggest complaint that I see all the time. But I also see we have in Florida, the Marketable Record Title Act, which says that after 30 years, any encumbrances on land are extinguished, including deed restrictions. So this law doesn't apply to condominiums, but it applies to homeowners associations. So as these homeowner associations hit this 30-year mark, unless there's something in somebody's chain of title that preserves it, or if the association filed a notice of preservation before the 30-year anniversary, these deed restrictions are expired. Well, these associations continue to assert that they're mandatory associations and don't acknowledge that their deed restrictions expired. So there's a huge number of those cases. And now we're getting into Florida-friendly landscaping cases. Florida has... the aquifer is being depleted. It's very low. At one point in 2014, the state was considering importing water from Georgia. Never mind, we export bottled water all over the world. But they were thinking about importing water. And one of the things the legislature did in 2009 was pass a law that said that you can't make someone have a certain type of grass or landscaping that they could use Florida-friendly, drought-tolerant grasses and plants. Well, the homeowners associations want everybody to have St. Augustine grass, which barely grows in Florida. You can get it to grow if you put a lot of chemicals on it, a lot of pesticides, herbicides, fertilizer. But the problem is all of this goes right into our aquifer and our lakes. And it's a very thirsty grass. If you don't have rain for a week, you can guarantee you're going to have to water that grass at least 4 days the next week. So a lot of homeowners or taking out their St. Augustine grass and putting in some drought-tolerant grasses. Orange County, Florida, even removed all of their St. Augustine grass and put in Bahia grass to be proactive. But now we get the homeowners associations are suing the homeowners for doing this, saying they're not allowed to do it. The statute isn't clear enough, and they know the homeowners aren't going to spend $100,000 or $150,000 and 3 or 4 years of their life arguing over their grass. So they're giving in, and it's hurting the environment.
And is there a law? I mean, you said there was a law in Florida that said you could or had to, or how can we circumvent this death spiral in HOAs, because they just don't stop, do they?
No, and the Florida Friendly Landscaping Statute says that no homeowners association may prohibit or enforce their deed restrictions so as to prohibit a homeowner from implementing Florida-friendly landscaping. So, you know, that's not clear enough for the homeowners associations. They have lawyers put a spin on it. And then the other thing is there's no penalty.
Yeah.
There's no civil penalty. There's no criminal penalty.
Can you, how about a law that says it is illegal to have St. Augustine grass in Florida?
Well, that's never going to happen because the turf grass industry pumps millions of dollars into the state of Florida for the different agencies to promote their St. Augustine grass.
So it is illegal to have St. Augustine grass on private property. I guess I hate to come up with something like that. Forget it. Really bad idea. But
the special interest groups will shoot it down.
You know,
just like, I mean, we're trying to get the state to regulate homeowner associations. Some arbitration's better than none, but the special interest groups are shooting down every effort.
For arbitration?
Yeah.
It would benefit them, Barbara.
They do not want the state to charge every homeowner $2 to $4 per home once a year to fund the Department of Business and Professional Regulations to have an arbitration division.
Okay, so this would be, okay. On your website, you talk about arbitration and you say it's not a good idea to stay away from it. And I totally agree with you. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that? Because now you're promoting arbitration, at the state level.
Well, it's not that I promote stay away from it. You have to be careful of it. And you have to engage in arbitration under certain rules. You cannot just go to court and sue a condominium association if it's a subject matter that the Department of Business and Professional Regulations has jurisdiction over. They will dismiss the case, order you to pay the association's attorney's fees, and then you have to go start all over and go through the arbitration process. It's something I don't recommend anyone do without an attorney, because the associations have very shrewd attorneys, and they will twist and turn it any way they want.
What would really level the playing field? What could we possibly do to just make it so even for everyone?
You know, I don't know if I have the answer other than, you know, there should be some mandatory penalties and a mechanism for collecting them, and then maybe that would help level the playing field. Right now, associations, if a unit owner or a homeowner request official records and they send a certified letter asking for access to inspect the official records, the association has 10 business days to open the books and show them to the owner. Well, if they don't, starting on day 11, there's a $50 day penalty for up to $500. But collecting that penalty is a whole nother matter, because even though it's only $500, if it's a homeowners association, you're required to participate in pre-suit mediation, which will probably cost you anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, you know, depending on if you take an attorney or not. And if you can afford to pay the attorney to prepare for the mediation, because, you know, a lot of clients don't understand. They think, okay, you're just going to show up and make and argue my case. Well, no, there, you have to do some research to make sure the notice was proper. You know, certain things, make sure you don't, you're not wasting your time on something that, that you made a mistake on, you and you'll lose on a technicality. On the condominium side, you have to submit it to arbitration. So there's no easy way of collecting the money.
I keep thinking that we've made life unnecessarily complicated. If you are in an association, whether it's a condominium or a homeowners association, you are ultimately going to end up covering the costs and covering the mistakes of or the misdeeds of the board and the management, and you have a right to know. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you're going to pay the bill, you have a right to know what's going on. Why do we have to go through all these hoops to get that information? Why can't you just walk into the office and say, I want to see the books and records?
Well, because a lot of times, you know, these big interest firms, you know, they lobby heavy against any litigation, any legislation that's going to help the homeowner. So, you know, they put up these barricades, and there is such a problem with oversight on these associations. Theft is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years ago, there was a developer in one county. I was involved in the case, helped facilitate the investigation. The developer was arrested for stealing $539,000 from the homeowners association. But it took several years in making the right connections with law enforcement and state attorney's office to get that done. I mean, there's just no oversight. I mean, I get calls all the time that a board member or a community association manager stole money.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the law enforcement agencies in Florida say it's a civil matter. They're not going to investigate. There's a couple of counties that will investigate, and the ones that do investigate, it's got to be over a certain amount for them to really get involved. Because a lot of times, you know, people go to them with these, you know, cases, but they're so emotionally invested that, you know, the state, you know, law enforcement has to look at it. Is it a he said, she said thing, or is there really something there? Because everybody wants to accuse the boards of stealing money. That's the problem.
You know, if you walk into a 7-Eleven and you steal a pack of bubble gum, the police will be all over you for a pack of bubble gum. And I have no idea how much gum costs because I don't chew it. But why is there such a huge difference? I mean, you're talking about a developer who stole over $500,000. One of the management companies that managed my association here in Northern Virginia was accused of stealing over $2 million from a number of different associations. And the only reason they got caught, the only reason that the officials got involved is because this guy went on a drunk spree or drugs or I don't know what he did, and he tried to shoot a cop. And that's when the cops decided, hey, maybe we ought to see what's going on with this guy. And that's when we discovered that over $2 million had been stolen, embezzled from the homeowners.
Yeah. And but, try reporting it to the IRS. It seems to fall on deaf ears. They're missing a grand opportunity to go after somebody, but they just don't.
Well, they don't because, yeah, they don't. I mean, nobody knows.
I mean, they're like any other government agency. They're understaffed and overworked. I get it. But, you know, I mean, you report somebody that's stealing over $100,000, you would think they would jump on it.
You
but
would
they
think so? No, I know. I know. I mean, there's so much stuff that goes on in this country that it's nobody's business. But HOAs seem to be right the most lucrative place for anybody with
any criminal intentions.
Any nasty intentions where they can absolutely get away with it.
Yeah. My prior career, I was a finance analyst, so I tell all my clients, follow the money. You will find out more than you want to find out once you start digging into their books.
Well, there's a book out there, Neighbors at War by Ward Lucas. And he came out with that book a few years ago. And in it, he has an entire section where he spent, I don't know, one evening, one night, just Googling HOA and embezzlement. Mm-hmm. And he had several pages of listings of all of the embezzlements that had taken place.
Yeah, and there's a lot that's unreported and goes unnoticed.
Well, a lot of homeowner associations will not report it. They'll keep it undercover because they believe that if people know that they have lost money, that it will devalue property. I mean, this devaluing property nonsense will cover all kinds of crimes.
Yeah, and in Florida, people are afraid to report it because they then become a target of the association.
Right.
And, you know, then all of a sudden their checks are lost, they didn't pay their assessments, and the association's trying to foreclose on their home. And, you know, I always say Florida should have a disclaimer at the border that says, beware, HOA laws apply here. Because people come from all over the country, move to Florida. Some have never even heard of homeowner associations, like myself, when I moved here 20 years ago. So they don't know that it's, you know, a government without being classified as a government. They can lien and foreclose on your house. They can fine you, and then if the fines reach a certain level, they can foreclose on your house. I mean, none of this is known to people, especially people coming from another area. And then I get so many people, you know, tell me I was shocked to find out what I had gotten myself into.
I think there are very few states that don't have HOAs or just have a handful of them where people live in ignorant bliss. But most places have them because there's such a boon to local municipal governments.
Well, you know, and then, but a lot of states, you know, do it smart, too. Like, I know of one county in Mississippi where they have deed restrictions, and the county enforces the deed restrictions. You have a code enforcement officer go out to your house and tell you, you know, either you clean this up or we're going to fine you $25 a day. You're not going to argue with that person. But if it's your neighbor from down the street who knocks on your door and says, I demand you clean this up, I'm the HOA president, and you're going to do what I say, you get defensive. Or if you come home from work and you have that nasty letter in the mail saying that you're doing something wrong or you didn't pay your assessments, you know, you get defensive. Or if you're having financial problems and then you get that nasty letter, you get defensive.
You do. I just want to say something about the code enforcement. I've heard some horror stories from code enforcement as well, and they seem to have a tremendous amount of power. There was one, and I don't remember, my first encounter with code enforcement was a number of years ago when somebody called in to another show that I had been a guest on, and they said that code enforcement came in, walked into their houses, gave them a list of things that had to be done and the repairs that had to be made. They did at huge personal expense. Code enforcement came back and then ordered them at their expense to demolish the house.
Yeah,
and that
stories like that too.
That has happened on numerous occasions. It's not an isolated story. So I think we have to be a little careful with what we do and how we do it in this country. I mean, no other country spends so much time worrying about what the neighbors do or what your house looks like. You know, yeah. If there's a health issue, let the health department deal with it.
Yeah, then, and I don't know about other states, but in Florida, you know, we have a big problem with mold, but you can't get anybody to address the mold issues. Yeah, I mean,
I think mold is
not even the health department.
I was down there for a month many, many years ago, and I walked into the bathroom in the morning, and the washcloth was just black with mold.
Wow. Yeah.
You do have a problem, and you're going to have that anywhere. But I think, you know, when you have situations where there is vermin infestation, or the house is falling down, or, you know, an abundance of animals, certain hoarding conditions, you know, that's where I think that the health department needs to come in. But whether you've got peeling paint or weeds in your yard, or, you know, I mean, some of that stuff is just totally ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, the associations are supposed to increase your property values.
They don't. It's a lie.
They don't. Yeah, no. There was a study years ago that showed that they actually decreased the property values.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a case I was involved in where my client was in a wheelchair, and the association, had been having their meetings in a vacant lot that had soft mud, cypress trees with cypress knees. And the homeowner, you know, he was new to the community. He asked them, can you have some of the meetings in a place where I could attend?
Yeah.
And they refused.
Yeah.
They told him he could sit in his car and listen, or, you know, just outrageous stuff. At one point, they offered to carry him to the meeting. So, I mean, it just really got outrageous. The client was able to get the statute changed to where, and you would think common sense would tell you if, you know, the statute says all meetings must be open to all members. You would think they would have common sense to know that means you cannot put up barriers so that your members can't attend. But they do it all the time. They will call the police and get somebody trespassed if they don't like them. Or in this case, they just held the meetings where the client couldn't get to the meeting. So he was able to get the statute changed to where it says that they must provide reasonable accommodations to a disabled member if requested.
Wouldn't the ADA come into play there?
Well, the Fair Housing Act, actually, which has incorporated the Americans with Disabilities Act, came into play, because the Fair Housing Act says, you know, that people that live in communities need to be able to attend the meetings so that they know what's going on. You know, you can't enforce rules against people if you don't let them attend the meetings where the rules are being passed that affect how they use their property. But, I mean, this case just, it snowballed, and then we found out that the community didn't even have deed restrictions. The Marketable Record Title Act extinguished their restrictions. So their big law firm let them run up hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, in credit to defend all these cases. And this association takes in about $10,000 a year in revenue. So I don't understand them allowing them to run up over, you know, around $400,000 in legal bills when they only bring in $10,000 a month.
They don't care. They'll just take it. You know, they'll foreclose on all the owners, and off we go.
Well, they've been passing special assessments against all the owners, despite their deed restrictions saying that assessments are capped at $350 a year. So I'm sure there's more litigation in the pipeline for them.
So where is the state government? Why is it that they're sitting by and allowing this sort of stuff to keep going on?
Well, here's one of the problems I've realized. Most of the time, it's the Florida Bar will not take a complaint against a lawyer except from anybody except the client. It has to be really, really horrendous for them to take a complaint against a lawyer from someone that's not their client. So when homeowners try to complain to the Florida Bar about overbilling and these attorneys pad their bills ridiculously. I mean, you're talking about trying to, you know, get $8,000-$10,000 on maybe $1,300 of assessments. And I've seen them go way more than that. The Florida Bar says, no, you're not the client, so, you know, we're not going to investigate this. The HOAs aren't going to complain about their lawyer because, you know, they're making the money. They're getting paid, you know, with the liens and the foreclosures. They're getting their assessments, and any fees that the attorney runs up are getting paid, you know, eventually by the homeowner.
What about the Attorney General of the state of Florida? Why is this not in his or her jurisdiction? Why is it that...
Because they say it falls under the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, go there. And when you point out that homeowner associations aren't regulated by DBPR, they turn around and tell you again, go to DBPR.
So why can't, you know... This is where the reform needs to happen, I think. We really need to put this squarely in the hands and the laps of the state governments to enforce, because this kind of runaround and kicking the ball and from one person to the other, passing the buck, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
Somebody has got to say, all right, guys, we're just going to look into this. And our citizens, our taxpayers, our voters deserve better than what we're giving them.
They do. And to think of all the money spent on going back and forth on litigation and getting some litigation or getting litigation that... Yet it sounds good, but there's no teeth to it. There's no penalty for you know, violating the statute. I mean, it's just horrendous.
There are a couple of things that I want to go back to. Number one, you just mentioned that the police come and they'll keep homeowners out of meetings claiming they're trespassing. How come if you call the police because you're... You know, whatever problem happens, it's a civil matter. But I have heard from homeowners across the country, so it's not, you know, just one state or an isolated incident, where they try to go to a meeting and the police actually show up and arrest them, handcuff them, and sit them down in the cruiser during the course of the meeting. Why is it that the police... who are taxpayer-funded, are doing the dirty work for the HOA and getting away with it?
Well, in a meeting, I can tell you there's tend to be a lot of witnesses. So, of course, you're going to have, you know, pretty much the whole board saying this person's disrupting the meeting or this person threatened me or whatever. I've seen videos of meetings where the board members are punching the homeowners, you know.
Yeah.
It's outrageous. But when you get into these one-on-one things, you know, a homeowner calls from their home to make a complaint, you know, unless the police actually see something happen, they won't get involved. I actually asked an Orange County deputy once, why is everything a civil matter? And he told me because no matter what they do, one person or the other is going to file a complaint against them. So it's just better to tell them it's a civil matter, take it to court.
So the police are basically protecting themselves.
Yes, I think they are. And that and the fact that they do have violent crimes that they're trying to deal with, you know, again, you know, just like any other government agency, they're understaffed, overworked.
The other the other thing that I wanted to bring up is, why is it that associations refuse to, and get away with it, refuse to cash a check? For instance, you were talking earlier about checks go missing, all of that stuff, but sometimes the association is handed a check and they refuse it.
Well, in Florida, that is not legal. The problem is it's not codified in a statute. That is what we call judge-made law. The courts have ruled you can't refuse someone's payment. Most of the time, the associations don't know this. The property manager or whoever, you know, some of the associations are self-managed, so it may be a board member. And then, you know, if the matter's been turned over to the attorney for collections, the attorney tells them, do not accept any checks. Tell them they have to contact us. Well, that's not correct. I mean, they need to tell them to accept the check and forward it to the attorney's office. But they get away with it because most people don't know their rights. I mean, the biggest thing is people are not educated about their rights or their duties in an association. You know, they think that they can do whatever they want until they get that lawsuit against them. Or they do know, you know, what their duties are, and for whatever reason they're being targeted by the board, or, you know, a lot of homeowners feel that if they have financial hardship, the association will understand, and they don't understand that the association has a duty to collect from everyone in a uniform manner. They can't say, oh, I'm sorry you lost your job, or I'm sorry you got divorced, or I'm sorry your spouse died. That doesn't come into play. When you go to court, the judges can't consider that either.
I know when I was on the board and we had, you know, we had someone who didn't have health insurance. Her daughter was battling cancer as a child, and she had a choice of buying medicines for the child or paying her assessments. And we chose as a board to allow her to buy medicines for her child and have her pay us back when she was able to do that. And it worked out.
And that's good, because, you know, here in Florida, that would be a risk because, you know, some homeowners could claim you're not doing your duty, or you're waiving assessments for some and not others, and cause a lot of legal problems. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like a no-win situation. It's like the property taxes. You either pay them or the county's going to take your home.
But supposing we had said, no way, we're just going to go ahead and insist that you not buy your child potentially life-saving meds and pay us instead.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sit right with you morally. I get it.
Morally, it doesn't. But look, if she had gone to the press, you know, property values would have tanked. Why would anybody want to move into a development, and I hate to call it a community, but a development where we cared nothing about our neighbors?
Right. But that's the thing, because, you know, not all the neighbors think that way, and they're like, wait, you're making me foot the cost for running this place and not that person.
No,
and they want to bring litigation. I mean, we had a similar situation in our community. So what we did was we got someone who wasn't on the board to go around and collect money and donations and give it to the family.
Yeah. No, I mean, we got the money. I mean, it was not, it wasn't just thrown away. We just gave her the option of buying medicines and trying to save her daughter's life. And I don't remember what happened. We're going back 25 years.
Yeah.
We weren't.
No, and morally, I think it's the right thing to do. You know, legally, it's just a risk.
Yeah, I know. I understand. I fully understand.
And I tell my clients all the time, there's things you can do legally, there's things you can't do legally, there's things you should do legally, and there's things that you could do legally, but maybe you shouldn't do.
But I think, you know, 25 years ago, it wasn't quite as nasty as it is now.
That's true, because today somebody would want to sue.
Well, you know, we had some people whining, and my question to them was, if that were you, what would you like us to do? If you had to make that choice, what would you like us to do? And so you put them in their shoes. The woman did pay us back, so we were not out of money. You know, we just didn't need it right then, which was fine. And that's the way you have a community.
But it worked out, you know. Like I tell my clients, my associations, you don't have to foreclose. You can enter into a payment plan with the owner. And as long as they're making steady payments, you know, and it could be whatever the association is comfortable with that person paying. So as long as both sides agree that it's a comfortable amount and they can pay, the association can approve a payment plan. You don't have to go out and take that person's house. But unfortunately, the way things are today, even when I'm doing my collections I try to make it as clear as possible, if you can't pay it completely, please ask for a payment plan and we'll present it to the board. But it's got such a bad reputation here in Florida that people are just ignoring the letters. So then I don't have any choice but to go out and file that lien and then send that notice that says, okay, now I have to foreclose on your house. And nobody wants to do that. Most of the associations don't want somebody's house. The ones that do are where you have rogue board members who are on an ego trip. They failed at their career, so they want to tell everybody they're running this corporation known as a homeowners association. and they're, I mean, my own association, you know, I sat in a board meeting where, you know, you had residents that owed thousands of dollars. He had one guy that was $300 past due, and they were going to go after him because he bought a new BMW.
Yeah.
You know, and I even spoke up. I said, how do you know it's his? How do you know it's not a company car, or his car is broken, he borrowed it from a relative or whatever? We don't care.
He's got one sitting there, and that's it. That's good enough for us. So, in your letter, you talk about witnessing board members targeting homeowners if you don't like them. And you go on to say that this targeting sometimes includes criminal activity, which is hard to prove.
Yeah, they know enough to be in that gray area where there's no witnesses. They know enough to, you know, where there's no proof. I mean, the level it reaches is shocking. I mean, I've had people come to me where they walk out their door and their car is in flames and there's a board member driving by laughing and pointing.
So, yeah, you talk about that. They actually burn cars?
I've had three people over the last 7 years, 8 years, come to me that have had their cars burn in their driveways. You can't prove it, I mean, unless you actually caught them doing it. You know, I've had people that had bomb devices on their front lawns. They weren't live bombs, but, I mean, you don't know that till you get the bomb squad out. Very common for associations to call the Department of Children and Families and claim you're doing drugs in your house with your kids present. And next thing you know, you're getting woke up in the middle of the night by investigators demanding to see your children who are in bed sleeping, where you were too, you know. I mean, they just stoop to all kinds of levels to do stuff. I've had people had their houses broken into, and you know when nothing's stolen except your file on the HOA, you kind of know who's doing it.
So you said you could write a whole book about the atrocities that are committed against homeowners?
I could if the attorney-client privilege didn't stop me.
But, I mean, you're talking about these things. You're not actually giving us any real details other than it's happening. Bums on loans, handicapped owners in wheelchairs being refused to attend meetings, sex discrimination, discrimination against veterans.
Yeah, I mean, some of the ones I've talked about have gone public. My client that was in a wheelchair, he has been very public about the way he was treated. It's been in the newspaper. It's been on the news. I had a service member that HOA foreclosed on his house while he was on active duty. That went up on appeal. Very well publicized story. They basically convinced the judge that he didn't need to be there.
He didn't need to be where?
In court to defend himself. And got the judge to sell his house. He found out when his wife came home from work and somebody had bought their house and was taking pictures of it and told her that she would have to get out. And, luckily the guy had a heart and agreed to rent them their own house while the appeal was in play, and the court reversed it. So you're talking about somebody, the appellate court, the decision actually said, this is somebody who laid down their personal life to defend this country, and you took their house.
Wow. We've known of cases where veterans have come home and found their houses foreclosed on. There was one out of Texas, I think, not too long ago, two or three years ago. Of course, the celebrated case of Winona Blevins, 82-year-old widow.
Yeah.
Whose house was foreclosed on. And it turns out that she had missed one payment, but when she got a bill for the following year, there were annual payments. She said, oops, she was in the hospital. She said, I did forget to pay that. So she wrote a check for the full amount, walked over, put it in the box where she was supposed to deposit it. And the treasurer decided he'd already started foreclosure proceedings and just didn't feel like stopping them at that point. Kept her check and went ahead and foreclosed on her mortgage-free house.
Now, I hear that a lot, believe it or not. There was a case like that in the news recently, a young couple that they didn't have a mortgage on their house. They fell on hard times. They figured they'd catch up the assessments, and next thing you know, their house was being sold. It actually did sell, and the buyer worked out a deal with them. But I hear this a number of times every year. This happens. It's just crazy the games they'll even play with the notices. My own daughter, who lived in my neighborhood, our HOA president used to walk by her house every day, and if my daughter was outside, she'd stop and say hello and, make over my grandson. And, this was every day. Next thing my daughter knows, there's a sheriff knocking on the door, serving her with a lawsuit because one of her checks didn't get to the association, so they claim she mailed it. But she didn't notice that it didn't clear because she was busy with a newborn. So, the $190 payment cost her $800 in legal fees. And the notices were being mailed to her husband's father in another state because her husband was a junior and the father was a senior. He had nothing to do with their house, nothing to do with their mortgage, but they were mailing the payments to another state.
You know, that happens quite often, Barbara.
Yes.
You buy a house in your name, and they can send you bills, and they can send you all kinds of things. But the minute there's some kind of legal paperwork, all of a sudden they seem to have misplaced your proper address, and you no longer live in the neighborhood, but you're God knows where.
I have a client right now that she told the association it was a house she inherited. She told the association where she lived. They even acknowledged in an email they had her correct address, but she finds out that this property she was inheriting was being sold because they tried to serve her in another state, and they knocked on a door. It was in New York, where it's an apartment building, and they don't have a doorman, but it's locked. And so someone who didn't even speak English opened the door, and they handed the complaint to that person and said that they served her roommate. And she didn't have a roommate. And the property in New York, she only went to 3-4 times a year.
So they do it on purpose so that you
don't... Yeah, they do it on purpose.
I had one CAI attorney tell me that a friend of his, another CAI attorney, used to send notices, return receipt requested and all of that, but there was nothing in the envelope.
I have had cases where the association addresses the letter to the homeowner, but then will mail the letter to either the property manager or a board member, you know, in the community, so that they have a tracking number that says it was delivered to an address in that zip code, but there's no proof of what address it was delivered to.
I've
seen that 3 times in the past 5 years. They will try everything in the book. I mean, Florida law requires that you send 2 notices, one regular mail and one certified mail return receipt. But the number of cases that I see where they go to court and they don't have that return receipt, oh, well, we just tracked it on the UPS website. Well, the tracking doesn't say and who signed for it. It just says it was delivered in such and such zip code. So there's no proof of who received the letter.
We have a mess, don't we? We have
a
real mess.
We have a huge mess. Right now there's a bill in Florida that what they would like, and, you know, CAI and CAN are trying to get it shot down, where the associations are required to send a reminder notice if they don't receive your payment.
I would like to see people knock on doors. And whenever I have suggested that, CAI says, oh, they might get shot. You know, you don't want to do that.
Well, and that does happen, especially here in Florida, where they have stand your ground law. And you can, if you fear for your life, you can pull out a gun. But unfortunately, it's always been the homeowner that got shot, not the board member.
Not the board member, but we have created, I mean, this is not normal. We have created this air of hate, discontent, mistrust. If you're in an HOA, there's no sense of community left.
Well,
there's...
no, because it's neighbor against neighbor. It's
yeah.
the ones who were in power, you know, especially when most of them are on an ego trip, you know, wanting to tell their neighbors how to live their lives.
I don't think, I personally don't think that this can really be made whole or normal or friendly or anything else. I don't think you can really tweak it. We can pass all kinds of laws, but as
well,
you mentioned,
you know, my husband did have one solution, and it wasn't a legal solution, and I was shocked when he did it because I didn't even know he was doing it. And he went around door to door and collected proxies and voted out the board and voted himself in as our HOA president. The same group of people had been in control for over 20 years, and they were shocked when he did that. And, you know, everybody loves my husband. He's a people person, you know. He gives everybody a fair shot. So he hates that he's the HOA president, but when I remind him if he steps down, they're going to get back in power, he stays. He stays there.
That's how we took over the board as well. We walked around with proxies. You know, we are out of time. I want to thank you a whole lot for coming on, Barbara. You have been amazing. I would like you to give out your website and any contact information, your location in Florida as well.
Sure. My website is www.stagelaw.com. and you can actually reach my blog from the website. And I am located in Orlando, Florida. And do you want the specifics of the address?
No, I think all that contact information is on your website.
You can find me, yeah, and you can find me on the Florida Bar website.
Yeah, so
we'll floridabar.org.
Yeah, but I would like, and I hope that you will come back.
Definitely.
And talk to us and tell us what's going on. Maybe we can figure out a way to deal with
sure,
this.
Sure, definitely check back with me after July 1st. Maybe we'll have some new laws that help.
All right, you got a deal there, Barbara.
Okay,
you've got a deal.
Take care.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.